everyone, and welcome to episode 24 of the Medieval Podcast. I'm Danielle Sobalski, also known as the 5-Minute Medievalist. If there's one thing I love, it's books. People sometimes ask me that desert island question. You know, if you're trapped on a desert island and you could only bring one or two books, what would you bring? And for me, this is an agonizing question because there's so much to read and there's so much to learn. But someone on social media said they'd be interested in hearing some of my book recommendations, and that I can definitely do. So today's episode is an awesome one for me because I'm going to tell you about some of my favorite books. So a couple of words before we start. First of all, I got hooked on the Middle Ages through Arthurian and Robin Hood traditions, and that's where my love has always been in the period. So a lot of my favorite stuff does follow the traditional Anglo-French history, but of course, the world is so much bigger than that, and there are so many great books out there that have to do with the global Middle Ages. So at the end of this podcast, I've asked Peter Konieczny from Medievalist.net to tell me about some of his favorite books because he's read the globe more widely than I have. And I do encourage you to go on to medievalist.net, where you can find lots of articles and recommendations of a more globalized Middle Ages. The second thing is you're going to hear me talk a lot about people who are my friends or people who have been on the podcast or both. And this may really seem like I'm just plugging my friends' work, but it's actually kind of the opposite. I've taken the time to reach out and get to know a bunch of these authors because I love their work. And I can't actually think of anyone on my list who reached out to me first. So if you find they're on my list, that means I love their work. And if they're also my friends, it just means I'm lucky enough to have gotten to know them. So that's what I wanted to say before we get started. So let's jump right into it. So what are some of my favorite books? So I've kind of sorted these out into categories so that we can kind of have some sort of organization to them. So we'll start with popular history. And popular history's got a bit of a bad rap lately in that sometimes there are mistakes in it. And that can be terribly embarrassing, as we've seen on social media lately and in the news. But so much public history is really, really good history done by people who have all the qualifications you could ever ask for. And so there are so many good popular histories. We really should pay attention to them and read them as well. We shouldn't say that they're not worth reading because, you know, they're not written in academic prose. In fact, I'm a super, super fan of public history, and that's where I want to start today. So speaking of people who are awesome public historians and also my friends, I'm going to start with Dan Jones. He is one of my favorite writers when it comes to popular history, and that is because he really gets at the point of everything really quickly and in such beautiful prose. I saw one time he was reviewed as having muscular prose, and I think that's really true of his work. He's got just great adjectives in it that really put you in the story. So Dan's got a book on the Crusades coming out in the fall, which I have not read. It's just about finished being published. But before that, his latest book was on the Templars, The Rise and Spectacular Fall of God's Holy Warriors. And that one made the New York Times bestselling list because it is a really great book. My favorite of Dan's work so far is his work on the Plantagenets. And it could be because of his first sentence in that book. And the first sentence in that book is about the White Ship disaster. And it just says, "The prince was drunk." And it really kind of gets at how beautifully Dan can put you in the story, give you the information, and really make you curious about what's to come next. So Dan has a whole lot of work. My favorite of his work currently is The Plantagenets, but he's definitely somebody that you should be reading if you're interested in medieval history. The next person is Helen Casser, who I love. She's been on the podcast before. We were talking about She-Wolves. So I would highly recommend She-Wolves as a book. This is the book about women who ruled England before Elizabeth. So all sorts of queens, medieval queens, and how important they were, and a little bit more of their life story. And again, Helen has this really engaging way of getting you to see these people as real, to see their lives as real, and she gets at what they may have been thinking. Of course, we can't know for sure what they were thinking, but Helen really has a great way of getting at what might have been going through these people's heads at the time. And she does this based on all sorts of careful research. So I love Helen Casser. I'd recommend She-Wolves as a book, and also Joan of Arc, A History, which is one of my favorite books as well. A lot of my favorite public historians are from the UK, so I'm going to keep following along with that. Another person that you should be reading, if you're not reading already, is Mark Morris. Mark has put out a whole bunch of books on kind of a range of subjects. So he's written on castles, he's written on the Norman Conquest. You'll see him talking about King John all the time in a very funny way on Twitter if you follow him. My favorite book of Mark's is A Great and Terrible King, which is a biography of Edward I, who you might know as Longshanks, the guy from Braveheart. Don't take that up with Mark because it may not go too well if you say, quote Braveheart at him. But Mark's work is also very careful, it's very engaging, and it also has a sense of humor, which is something that I value when I'm reading history because I don't want it to be dry. I want to feel like I'm there. And I want to see the historian behind it as well, the thinking that they go through. And so some of Mark's observations that he makes, some of them are pithy, which I really appreciate because it shows his work and his thinking behind it. And it's really great work. A Great and Terrible King is my favorite of Mark's work, and I would really highly recommend that one as well. So to round out popular historians, and again, these ones are all from the UK, but this isn't an exhaustive list by any means, is Peter Frankopan. His book is called The Silk Roads, A New History of the World. And wow, this book was a game changer when it came out. You can see it everywhere. I've seen it in the background of television shows and bookstores, which I quite like. And there's even a kid's version of this book. And Peter Frankopan really kind of recenters the world, not in Europe, but in the Middle East, and talks about the different empires that existed, how the trade routes worked, how people interacted along the Silk Roads, and how this worked culturally, how it worked in terms of material goods, and how culture really changed because of these places in which cultures intersected, met, and exchanged ideas. So this is a really, really fabulous book, especially if you've mostly been concerned in your reading with Europe. This will change your perspective on how important Europe was in the Middle Ages. And the answer to that is that it wasn't as important as other areas. Even if you love it, Peter Frankopan's book, The Silk Roads, is a great one to give you kind of an idea of the global Middle Ages. So if you're starting to read in that direction, go with The Silk Roads. So the next category that I want to talk about is fiction. And Peter, who we'll be hearing from later, tells us what got him into reading the Middle Ages and becoming a historian as a teenager. I have to admit, for me, it was a novel, which is kind of in the romance genre, called Lady of the Forest. And this was a novel about Robin Hood. It was by Jennifer Robson. And I read it back in the day. And it left a big impression on me because it wasn't the Errol Flynn type of Robin Hood. This was somebody who'd been fighting on crusade. He'd come back to England, had some PTSD. And that was something that I hadn't come across before when I was looking at, you know, Robin Hood stories or Arthurian stories. So this was a novel that had a huge impact on me. I haven't read it in a few years, so, you know, I'll take this recommendation with a grain of salt, but I was really engaged by it to the point at which, you know, I remembered it very specifically and went to buy it as an adult, and they had changed the cover to sort of a Fabio type cover, and I did still bring it up to the cash and, you know, hand it over to the clerk and say, this is worth reading. They've changed the cover on me, but here it is. But a really good romance novelist right now is my friend Beth Kingston, Elizabeth Kingston. She writes about Wales in the Middle Ages. And Beth and I met on Twitter because I really appreciated the way in which she makes her characters real people. So they're not stereotypes of the Middle Ages. Nobody's wearing a petticoat, as they sometimes do in romance novels that are set in the Middle Ages. Beth's work really focuses on people as people. So the complicated nature of their lives. So her latest work is called Desire Lines, and it is the latest in a series of works that are about medieval Wales. I would definitely recommend, if you love romance novels, or even if you just want to read a novel that has kind of a less stereotypical perspective on the Middle Ages, read Desire Lines by Elizabeth Kingston as a place to start. Moving away from romance, we do have mystery as well. My friend Candace Robb, who was on the podcast not too long ago, she's written two series of medieval mysteries, the first one being the Owen Archer series, which I quite love, and the other being the Kate Clifford series. So I'm not going to talk too much about Candace because we did have her on her own podcast and she can speak so well about her books that she doesn't need me to do it for her. But I do want to say I really love the Owen Archer series, especially the first one of that series is called The Apothecary Rose. And if you want to learn more about that, you can check out the podcast that I had with Candace a couple months ago. As a Canadian, you want a Canadian connection as well. So if you like to read medieval fantasy, it's not all about Game of Thrones. You might want to read Guy Gavriel Kay's work. Sometimes it's set in the real world and people will travel back to kind of a version of the Middle Ages. It's not the Middle Ages that we recognize as historically accurate. It's a version of the Middle Ages. So he's jumped around to different time periods. His latest work is called The Brightness Long Ago. Guy Gavriel Kay has a whole bunch of books that are based on Middle Ages. Isabel is one, spelled with a Y. That is an award-winning book, so you can check that out as well. And I know people are going to ask me if I am a fan of Bernard Cornwell, and I have to say, I actually haven't read his books yet. I'm sorry, I do have The Winter King on my shelf. I am going to read it, but I can't really speak on Bernard Cornwell because I haven't read him yet. So in case you're going to shout out at me, what about Bernard Cornwell? I don't know yet. I will let you know once I've read The Winter King. So that takes us through popular history and fiction, two things that I love to read and can read on my spare time, you know, till the cows come home. But there are other things that you want to read as well. So primary sources are a really awesome way to get to know the Middle Ages. So primary sources for people who haven't been in academia for a while are the sources that are from the Middle Ages directly. So usually in translation, because many of the things that we have from the Middle Ages were written in Latin or older versions of English, French, Spanish. So they're usually in translation, but primary sources are the works that were written in the Middle Ages that you want to read. So I do have some recommendations for that as well, because primary sources are one of my favorite things. I love being able to access those people directly. And for those, you want to have a really good translation. So I'll tell you some of my favorite translations. I will start by taking a stand. It's always controversial to take a stand on this, but I'm going to. My favorite version of Beowulf is one that was translated by Roy Liuza, so R.M. Liuza, and it's put out by Broadview. You could read the Seamus Heaney one that has got some very poetic turns of phrase in it, but I really feel like the translation by Roy Liuza gets at not only the Anglo-Saxon words themselves, but the sense of the words, and he really makes the attempt to get the alliteration in there as well. So you get a better sense of Anglo-Saxon poetry from this translation. So the Broadview version of Beowulf is my favorite. I'm going to take a stand there and I'm going to defeat all comers because I really think that's a good translation. The other one that, you know, can be controversial is Sir Gawain and the Green Knight. Which one is the favorite one? For me, my favorite version of it is the one that was edited by J.R.R. Tolkien and E.V. Gordon. So the second edition, which is the one that you can most often get, is edited also by Norman Davis. And this is the Oxford one. It's that really horrible lime green one that you'll see on all sorts of medieval shelves. But you can really look at the beauty of this particular poem, again, because you can access it sort of in its original version. So my favorite version of Sir Gawain is the Oxford one, second edition, the lime green one. You'll see it on Amazon. Can't miss it. As far as other sort of classic texts that you read in translation or just in a good edition, my favorite copy of Le Morte d'Arthur is the one from Norton. This is one that, again, it doesn't look particularly lovely on the shelf. It's the one that's edited by Stephen H.A. Shepherd, but it is just chock full of information. So if you're coming at this as kind of a beginner, and you're especially not super familiar with Middle English, because this is in Middle English, it's got all sorts of notes that will help you. So my favorite edition of Le Morte d'Arthur is the Norton one, but edited by Stephen H.A. Shepherd. So that's a good one. Another primary source that I think people should read is always The Book of the City of Ladies by Christine de Pizan. So if you followed my work, you know I'm a huge fan of Christine and her work and her brilliance. And The Book of the City of Ladies was the first time I'd come across Christine and saw into her thinking and how well put together she had made these arguments back in, you know, the 14th century, 15th century, arguments in favor of women's rights, or at least the respect that women should be getting. And this book kind of blew my mind. So I will share the edition that I read in university that really kind of got me interested in Christine. And I've been a big fan of Christine ever since. So this is the bright yellow edition, which is translated by Earl Jeffrey Richards with a foreword by Natalie Zeman Davis. So this is the Earl Jeffrey Richards translation. You can find Christine in all sorts of translations, but this edition was the one that brought me to Christine de Pizan. So The Book of the City of Ladies, I will always recommend that as kind of an introduction to the thinking that women were doing in the Middle Ages. Because so often we have this idea that because we don't have a lot of works written by women, that they weren't writing or they weren't particularly thinking about stuff deeply. And of course, that's nonsense. If we use our logical brains, we know that women were obviously thinking as humans back in the day. But I think there is this general impression that women weren't thinking deeply or critically. And The Book of the City of Ladies is something that will definitely change your mind on that. Another primary source that I would definitely recommend is Avicenna's Canon of Medicine. So I think there are better translations than the one that I have, but the one that I have is kind of interesting in that it was edited by people with a science background. So I thought that was kind of interesting. So the translation that I have of Avicenna's Medicine is just called Avicenna's Medicine. And the three translator editors are Abu Asab, Amri, and Mikotsi. So those are the three editors of that particular one. And again, I think you could probably find it in a better translation, but this one is definitely a reader-friendly translation, and it's got kind of an interesting perspective from a scientific background of what Avicenna's work was, how it could be useful, and its kind of its place in the medical tradition. So Avicenna's Medicine is another good one to read. Another primary source that I would really recommend everyone looks at is The Good Wife's Guide, a medieval household book, which is a translation of the work by Le Ménager de Paris. This one that I like to use is translated by Gina L. Greco and Christine M. Rose. So this is a version of the book that was written by an older husband to a younger wife, and it gives her advice on everything from flea cures to how to set the table for a feast to recipes to how you should be devoted to your husband, what you should be doing for him at the end of the day, you know, meet him at the door with a drink in his slippers type thing. This is medieval advice on how to be a good wife. And so it's hugely, hugely interesting and also tells us a lot about the time period and the values. And it's also in its own way kind of sweet in that this is an older husband. Like I said, he's giving advice to a younger wife with the expectation that she will outlive him. And so he's teaching her not only how to be a good wife to him, but also how to live her life in a way that will help her beyond their marriage if he dies first, for example. And so, you know, there's a lot of in it that's problematic from our 21st century point of view. But at the same time, it's a really interesting book in that it was written with really good intentions. And it's just full of fascinating detail. So The Good Wife's Guide is definitely something that I would recommend. So if you're looking for a series that has really great primary source material, no matter what the book is, the first one I need to mention is the Team's Middle English Texts series, which you can find online. You can find a lot of the stuff online. And again, because it's Middle English, you'll see it in Middle English, but they have such fantastic notes that will make it accessible. And these are really meant for students so that you can, it's not that difficult for anyone who's just kind of an armchair historian to access these texts and read the actual primary sources in Middle English. So the Team's Middle English Text series is a really, really great one. The other one that I would recommend is the series of readers by U of T Press. And they've gone through a whole range of things from Vikings to medicine to urban life to the one that's coming out that Michael Livingston talked about, Michael and Kelly DeVries' book on military history. So all of the books in the U of T Press's series that are just called whatever, a reader. So medieval medicine, a reader, the Viking Age, a reader. All of these ones are a very, very good series that gives you little snippets of primary sources and their contexts. And they are really, really great sources. Can't recommend that series highly enough. And finally, if you want to have a really racy primary source, I would recommend that you read the Fablio. These are not kid-friendly. They are really, really dirty, but that gets you at the medieval sense of humor, what they thought about people. And I think that a sense of humor really tells you a lot about a culture. And the Fablio were hugely popular in the Middle Ages. So I would definitely recommend looking at the Fablio as a way of kind of getting a glimpse at people's culture at the time. So my favorite translation of the Fablio is the one by Nathaniel E. Dubin. That's D-U-B-I-N. And these translations are really accessible. They get at kind of the really filthy language people are using in Fablio. He doesn't hold back on those things. And he also cleverly does it in rhyme, which I think, you need to give someone kudos for that because, wow, to translate something from Old French and do it into English in rhyme, I think is brilliant. So I recommend the Fablio is another primary source to get you at medieval culture. And finally, there's the scholarship that you can read on the Middle Ages. So for me, I'm really interested in social history. So those are the kind of books that I'm going to recommend to you. But scholarship is so important to read. If you start reading about history through popular history, that is an awesome way to do it. It gives you everything you need to start. And then you want to go deeply into the scholarship, as deeply as you want to go. And there is so much great scholarship. And I've had so many great scholars on the podcast. I'm hoping to have lots more on the podcast that will get deeply into their particular subject. But there are ones that I would highly recommend to everybody that's just starting to learn about the Middle Ages. Now, the price points on this kind of thing are higher. So you do have to kind of consider before you buy them. I will only recommend the books to you that I love, that I come back to you again and again. These are really important works, at least to me, in the scholarship that they tell us about life in the Middle Ages. So I'm going to start with, if you were on Twitter this week, you'll have seen a lot of gushing about The Trotula by Monica Green. The Trotula is a compendium of women's medicine, but it is so many more things than that, in that they do talk about women's medicine in it. And again, this is a collection of medical advice, especially recipes from the Middle Ages, and it's specifically geared to women's medicine. And Monica goes through like the whole history of the text, so I'm not going to go into that too much here. But you should know that what the things that they have in it they run the gamut from advice on contraception to advice on skincare to advice on health issues to advice on, what's the best way to shampoo your hair. So all of these things are in the Trotula. So it gives you kind of a wide range of the things that people were concerned with back in the day. And it's going to be exactly the same things that people were concerned with right now. So health and beauty and all of those things. Smelling good. These are all really important things in the Middle Ages as they are today. And the Trotula really gives you kind of a wide range of these things and how people addressed them. So how they dealt with them. How would you make deodorant? How would you make shampoo? How would you deal with the cessation of your menses, for example? Like, how would you deal with menstruation? How would you deal with contraception? All of these things are in the Trotula. And again, the scholarship that Monica has put into this has been amazing, and it's really well worth the read. So gushing about it on Twitter is the least we can do. It is a really, really great book, and I highly recommend it. So again, in terms of scholarship that I really highly recommend that everybody reads is the work of Ruth Mazo-Karas. So Ruth was also on the podcast a little while ago because I just love her work. And I've read most of her books and I would read them again in a heartbeat. She has a style of writing that gets at all of the scholarship, but it's not intimidating. And it will tell you so much that you need to know about social life in the Middle Ages. The one that I would recommend kind of as a starter book is Sexuality in Medieval Europe, Doing Unto Others, which I think is just the best title ever. But it's also a really great book that gets at people's sex lives, because we know that sex and relationships are so central to the human experience. And so you can't really get to know a culture until you get to know these relationships. So I always, always recommend Ruth Mazo-Karas's work. It's really, really important, and it will give you a glimpse into medieval life from a relationship and sexuality point of view. Another social history that I can't recommend highly enough is Urban Bodies by Carol Rockliffe. So the subtitle is Urban Bodies, Communal Health in Late Medieval English Towns and Cities. So this one is very England specific, but I think a lot of the things that Carol Rockliffe gets at in this can be extended to Europe more broadly, depending on what we're talking about. But in this book, she deals with everything from sanitation to law to what it was like to live in a city in the Middle Ages. So I think that while a lot of people will read sort of easier or perhaps more beginner books on this, I cannot recommend this book highly enough. Urban Bodies really gets at what it was like to live in a medieval city. And this is all based on really great scholarship. And again, it's England-based, so you do have to kind of extrapolate a little bit using common sense, but it is a really good book that I just love and come back to. So because I haven't really talked about military stuff, except for Dan Jones's work on the Templars and the Crusades, I wanted to mention another book that I really like and come back to as kind of a starting place, and that is Fighting Techniques of the Medieval World. And this is a book that has several authors on it. A few of them I know and can definitely highly recommend as scholars themselves. So these authors of this book are Matthew Bennett, Jim Bradbury, Kelly DeVries, Ian Dickey, and Phyllis Justice. And Fighting Techniques of the Medieval World is, again, just a great place to start in that they talk about techniques, they talk about strategies, they actually have diagrams of some of how what we think happened in some medieval battles. So you can actually see, you know, step one, this is what happened. And then step two, this is what happened. And so it's really, really friendly book that gets at what it was like for the military in the Middle Ages. So it covers a huge amount of territory and a huge amount of time, as do the Middle Ages in general. But it's a really great start if you want to learn a little bit more about how military life was for people in the Middle Ages, everything from their technology, again, to their strategies. So that is really great work. I want to recommend one last book, which is an archaeological book. It's called Medieval Life, Archaeology and the Life Course, and it's by Roberta Gilchrist. So this one isn't quite as reader-friendly as the other ones that I've mentioned. It's quite scholarly, but that said, it's very, very accessible in that the way it's laid out, you can learn so much about the Middle Ages and life based on the material objects that people used. So again, this is based on archaeology, where many of the other things that I've recommended are based on documents. And this is based on material culture. So this is very different from the other things I've recommended, but I do come back to it again and again because material culture is such an important part of culture, and it tells us so much about culture at the time. So Medieval Life will give you kind of sketches of some of the archaeological stuff that has been found, the context of these things, how they were used in normal life. And I really think this is another good book for people who are getting to know the Middle Ages, but also people who are already familiar with it might not be familiar with the archaeology from the time. So really highly recommend Medieval Life by Roberta Gilchrist. So most of the books that I've been talking about have been based in Europe because that is what I've mostly spent my time on. But Peter, from Medievalist.net, you have done a lot more reading globally. So what are some of the books that you've really enjoyed that have to do with the global Middle Ages?
Hey, I guess it would be the one I'd start with was the one that got me interested in history when I was actually a teenager. And it's actually a 14th century novel out of China. It's called Romance of the Three Kingdoms. It is very famous in China. It's one of the most famous kind of historical works. And it's kind of, they say 70% history, kind of 30% fiction. It is an account of how the Han Dynasty falls in the 2nd and 3rd century AD. And it's a kind of a tale of like warriors and battles and politics and strategy. It's something I always kind of read every few years. I'm very kind of much fascinated by it. It's like one of those just kind of things that, yeah, I love to pick up and enjoy as a good tale. So that was like that kind of history brought me into kind of medieval stuff. And so I've always kind of been looking for kind of works that aren't necessarily European based or ones that see kind of connections between, say, the medieval Europe and the larger medieval world. So another one that I've really enjoyed is called Mission to Asia. And it's a translation by Christopher Dawson. It's a translation of several texts of people visiting the Mongol world in the 13th century and the 14th century. One of them is this account by a friar named William of Rubrik. And he goes off to visit the Mongol Khan in the 1250s. To his mission there is really to, you know, convert the whole Mongol people. So he kind of is this fish out of water story as he travels all across like the steppe. Meets all these kind of cultures, gets into religious debates. Even meets the great Khan himself. And it's just, again, something I always found a really great tale. You know, another kind of a big book, a kind of fish out of water, is Natalie Zeman Davis's Trickster Travels. And that's the story. It's of a guy named Leo Africanus. He lives in North Africa, but comes to Italy. Kind of converts to Christianity for a while before heading back to the Islamic world and becoming a Muslim again. But it's all about his kind of journey. And so that's another book I would recommend.
So hang on for a sec. So The Romance of the Three Kingdoms is kind of historical fiction, right?
Yes. Yeah, it's kind of like, let's do a chronicle, but jazz it up.
It sounds awesome. And Mission to Asia is a translation of a medieval work that's kind of like Marco Polo's travels?
Yeah. It's several different kind of translations, translations of different texts of other people that kind of go to the Mongol world besides Marco Polo.
Okay, so there's several people's stories in there?
Yes.
And is there a translation of this that you'd recommend?
There's been several translations. The one I've always kind of had my hands on is called Mission to Asia. It's from Medieval Academy reprints for teaching series. So you can get it fairly cheaply online. And it's a translation that's done by Christopher Dawson. There are other translations that are probably better than his.
Okay, but this one has like a fairly reader-friendly translation, so it's not super heavy prose.
It was kind of meant to be kind of a text for students, so it reads fairly well, and the texts are really interesting on their own right.
Okay, awesome. And Trickster Travels is Natalie Zeman Davis's work on Leo Africanus, right?
Yeah, exactly. And Natalie Zeman Davis is very well known for lots of different kind of histories of the early modern world. So she's a really good writer. So again, that's a thing that's really well and easy to read.
So is it kind of like a micro history type book?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I've often, like you, I've had a lot of enjoyment for looking at these kind of little histories, little micro texts. So yeah, I always kind of like that. Those kind of, you know, a bit quirky, you know, not generally just a straight politics or a straight narrative, you know, often kind of little things. Another book I like, it came out fairly recently, is called The Cabinet of Byzantine Curiosities. It's by Anthony Caldelis. It's kind of based on, there's a one called like a Roman cabinet of Roman curiosities and a cabinet of Greek curiosities. So this is one, it's just little kind of bits of stories from various Byzantine history. So like strange events, strange battles, emperors that do weird things, or just kind of funny moments. So it's a very light read, something like if you want to kind of touch into the Byzantine world, that's a nice way to go.
So it's kind of a public history book where it's retelling stories from the Byzantine Empire?
Yeah, it's they call it Strange Tales and Surprising Facts. So it's, you know, something, you know, I think I would have enjoyed it when I was like, if I'd be 10 or like if I'm like 70. So just kind of fun stuff.
Well, that's the kind of book that we like. So that's, again, it's pretty reader friendly.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And it's one of those where you can kind of pick it up and just you can just read a few sections, read a chapter, then kind of put it down for another time. So, yeah.
Awesome. It's like the 5-minute medievalist.
Exactly, exactly.
I just kind of sneaked that in there. Okay, so what's the other book that you brought to look at?
Finally is the book that actually got me interested in medieval Europe. And the title that I have, it's called The Murder of Charles the Good. It's another translation of a text by Galbert of Bruges. And it's about the events of 1127 in like kind of present-day Belgium, where the Count Charles gets murdered and assassinated by his his nobles, and there's this kind of fighting in Bruges, fighting in the city, where it just goes crazy, where everyone starts fighting each other. Kind of European powers get involved, and Galbert is in the midst of it, and he's almost like a newspaper reporter, kind of covering day by day what's happening. So it's a very exciting account, kind of crazy at times. Galbert has his own views, so it's really interesting how he kind of puts this story together with lots of blood and gore, if you like that, because there's even one-on-one combats to the death. There's a brutal execution scene. So this is something that, like, again, when I was in university, it was like the first chronicle I ever read, and it kind of captivated me into like what medieval military history is, and kind of medieval society, things like that. So it's something that I've always really enjoyed, and I actually even did an issue of Medieval Warfare magazine based on the events of 1127 in Belgium or Flanders. So.
Yeah, this is one that I know you've come back to again and again, because you can't get enough of this story in this writing. So this is, again, this kind of a chronicle account from the Middle Ages. Do you know who this translation is by?
It's by James Bruce Ross. And again, it's not the only translation, but this version is probably the cheapest one you could get, like, online. It's been done again with the Medieval Academy reprint series. So there's lots and lots of copies kind of out there. Again, the translation is a bit outdated, but it's a great read. And like, I always find that I'm more interested in reading the medieval sources than kind of books about the Middle Ages. I always think that's one really great way of getting into the past, is to read the firsthand accounts from themselves, and experiencing that before you even read the commentary. So yeah, that's how I would suggest getting involved with medieval books.
Yeah, for sure. I'm really into primary sources as well, because I feel like this is the best way to really get a sense of the people as they were, and you really want to have good translations for that. And a lot of the stuff that you have on medievalist.net is based on primary sources. So if people want to read about the global Middle Ages, you have lots of stuff on that, don't you?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I try and find kind of little great stories, you know, things set in China, in India, the Middle Eastern world is, I find, like, a fascinating place. I find, like, particularly, say, the Mamluks of Egypt, that is a very rich area of accounts and stories, with, you know, you get works from, like, cookbooks to, you know, personal diaries, just a wonderful kind of collection of material that's, I always kind of try and like find bits and pieces that I get to talk about. So those are really great. You know, again, my kind of look into the world, you know, I will love to read like Icelandic sagas or Italian chronicles, you know, any kind of work is, I always find something interesting in it, and I try to share that on medievalist.net.
Yeah, I really love some of the stories that you have there. And before we move on, I just want to mention that for people who don't know who the Mamluks are, they are the basis of the Unsullied, if you are fans of Game of Thrones. And Peter especially likes the Mamluks.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think of them as the closest thing we have to Klingons.
True. He said this many times.
Yeah, they are just vicious towards each other. And it is, you know, to beat a leader, you kill the leader kind of mentality. But they are successful for over 250 years. They're able to rule Egypt and Syria just have this kind of amazing kind of story. So of basically people that become that are slaves. And they rise to the power of rulership, and they continue the system where everyone that was ruler used to be a slave. So it's again really kind of fascinating accounts, and there's all sorts of wonderful bits for me, anyways.
Well, it just goes to show that not all the action was happening in Europe. There was all sorts of stuff happening all over the globe, which is so important to remember. So before we go, do you have anything you want to tell us about the website this week?
Yeah, there's actually a couple of pieces that I want to mention that have proved really popular this week. One is Ken Monshine doing a defense of the Society of Creative Anachronism, so talking about a bit of the kind of tension between SCA and medieval academia. That's a really kind of interesting and kind of thought-provoking piece. And we also have Minji Su, who wrote a little bio of Lagertha. She is this Viking warrior queen. You might know her from the show Vikings. So this is Minji kind of telling us, well, where does this her story comes from, which is actually a couple different sources kind of play into that. So, but it's again, a really kind of fascinating take. And I hope you guys enjoy it as much as I did posting it.
Awesome. Thanks, Peter.
Thank you.
If you've been enjoying the podcast and want to help us keep it going, check out our Patreon page. You can become a patron while also scoring yourself a sweet subscription to Medieval Warfare Magazine. Find us at patreon.com/medievalists. For great articles about all aspects of the Middle Ages, including articles by yours truly and more book recommendations, you can follow medievalists.net on Facebook or Twitter at medievalists. To follow me, Danielle Sabalski, and talk about your favorite books, you can find me on social media at 5MIN Medievalist or 5 Minute Medievalist. You can also find my books, including The 5 Minute Medievalist, on Amazon. Our music is Beyond the Warriors by Guy Frog. Thanks for listening to me gush about all my favorite books. Have yourself an amazing day.